Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight, Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. A key city council committee debates expanding police curfew powers to control so-called teen takeovers. The state's budget deadline is approaching. We dig into the governor's spending plan proposal and its potential impact on Black families. And how a park 38 years in the making is finally becoming a reality. And now to some of today's top stories. Mayor Brandon Johnson is pitching lawmakers in Springfield on a wish list he's calling modest. Johnson has laid out his four priorities, including securing new revenue from amending the prepaid cell phone tax, extending the 911 surcharge. It also includes investing in the One System Initiative, a joint city-state shelter system for migrants and homeless people, as well as increasing funding for Chicago public schools. His visit comes as Governor J.B. Pritzker had previously suggested to reporters that the mayor should have gotten involved earlier in the state's budget process. Johnson today commented on his relationship with Pritzker.
I bear no tension against anyone. I don't. We have worked together on a number of issues. If anyone believes that politicians all sit around thinking how we can be each other's godchildren's parents, that's not reality. Just because you have disagreement doesn't mean that that's an obstacle. That's called democracy.
The U.S. economy shrinks for the first time in 3 years as President Donald Trump's tariffs fuel fears of a recession. According to data from the Commerce Department, the country's gross domestic product, a standard measure of a country's economic growth, contracted at a 0.3% annual rate in the first quarter of 2025. The slowdown came primarily from a dramatic increase in imports, which count against GDP, as businesses stocked up on foreign goods ahead of Trump's promised tariffs. In a post on Truth Social, the president says in part, quote, "This is Biden's stock market, not Trump's. I didn't take over until January 20th. Tariffs will soon start kicking in." It goes on to say, "Be patient." However, many economists warn recession risks are rising and say Trump's tariffs will hurt growth in the second half of the year. Public health officials are confirming the first two cases of measles in Cook County this year. In one case, a suburban adult sought treatment at a local hospital on Monday. In the other case, an adult Chicagoan noticed a rash last week after traveling internationally through O'Hare Airport. Both Cook and the Chicago Public Health Departments are working together to identify anyone else who may have been exposed. Health officials say two doses of the MMR vaccine are 97% effective against measles and generally provide lifelong immunity. If you don't have a passport and you plan to catch a flight in the U.S., you have 1 week to grab the Real ID.
Passengers without a Real ID, after that date, can expect delays, additional screening, and the possibility of not being permitted to enter the sterile area beyond the security checkpoint.
TSA says starting May 7th, that's a week from today, agents at airport security will no longer accept a regular driver's license or state-issued ID. The Real ID is issued by your Illinois Secretary of State's DMV offices, but federally approved to fly domestically. If you don't have a Real ID, you can still use a valid passport instead. And don't worry, you can still get your Real ID after May 7th. And for more on what you need to get your ID and where, you can check out our website. Up next, city council members are considering a plan that would allow Chicago police to impose snap curfews. We explain right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
An effort aimed at stopping large teen gatherings from happening in the city failed to advance after intense debate at City Hall today. The proposal would allow Chicago police officials to impose a curfew anywhere in the city with just 30 minutes notice. Our Heather Sharone joins us now with more. And Heather, this proposal was revised just before today's hearing, which lasted more than 5 hours. What changed?
Well, it would ensure that it would take two people to declare these snap curfews, both Police Superintendent Larry Snelling and Deputy Mayor for Community Safety Gary Ann Gatewood. Now, that was the subject of intense debate at today's hearings because some conservative alder people worried that that meant that the mayor essentially could direct his deputy mayor to block these curfews from being called. The mayor has said repeatedly he sees no value in expanding the city's curfew law. It just simply won't make the city safer, he has said.
Okay, so several members of the city council's progressive caucus, they raised some very serious concerns about this proposal. What are those concerns?
Well, there are big questions about how the city's police department will use this constitutionally. Of course, the city is under a federal consent decree to reform, and several alder people had big questions about why precisely these new powers were necessary. The police department can already order an unlawful gathering that has either turned violent or has somehow violated the rules to disperse. Why declare a curfew that would only apply to teens? We also heard from Alderman Jeanette Taylor, who said, why aren't we offering these teens something to do elsewhere in the city and, you know, enrichment in the parks or anywhere else, rather than just sort of putting them back into the law enforcement system, which of course we know can have serious consequences.
So what happens now?
Well, Alderman Brian Hopkins, who authored this measure, says he's going to bring it back perhaps on Monday to try to advance it. The full city council then could consider it on Wednesday. However, as I am fond of saying, if you have the votes, you vote, and if you don't, you delay. And this means that there is real concern that this power should not be given to the CPD or it should be curtailed in some way.
All right, Heather Sharone, I know you'll keep us posted next week.
You will.
Thank you. And you can read Heather's full story on our website. It's all at WTTW.com/news. Illinois lawmakers are finalizing the state's budget for the next fiscal year, but it's not happening without some challenges. Governor J.B. Pritzker is proposing a $55.2 billion budget as watchdogs sound the alarm on the state's $3.2 billion deficit. While Republicans say the state needs to cut spending and lower taxes, Democrats are raising concerns about cuts to services that they say families depend on. Here to share their thoughts on the budget are Adam Slade, Fiscal Policy Director at the Illinois Black Advocacy Initiative. Jay Dill, Budget Analysis Director at the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. And Ted Dabrowski, President of WirePoints, an independent nonprofit research and commentary organization focusing on Illinois' economy and government. Thank you all for joining us. Good to see you all.
Thank you.
Jade, let's start with you first, please. Governor Pritzker gave his budget address in February. Bring us up to speed on the budget's status right now.
Yeah, so currently it's the proposed budget, and it's just over $55 billion. And so for FY 2026, it's really a flat budget over FY 2025 levels. Governor Pritzker has mentioned that the revenue growth for FY 2026 is just under 2% over FY 2025 levels. So that has resulted in discretionary spending at just under 1%. For FY 2026.
And of course, right now in Springfield is the time when everybody's kind of like debating what goes where and
exactly.
How much before they take votes and send it to the governor.
Right.
Okay. And they have until the end of May.
Yes.
To get it all together.
Yes.
Okay. Adam, what has the Illinois Black Advocacy Initiative been pushing for with this budget?
Yes, we recognize that it's a difficult budget year and would like to make sure that certain investments are protected to benefit all of Illinois families, but especially our Black communities that often are very vulnerable to big budget changes. And so we are looking to address some of the fiscal uncertainty brought around the federal administration around health and human service funding and education funding in particular, funding for our state colleges and universities, expansion of early childhood coverage for our families, and getting closer to adequacy for K-12 education in our school districts for our kids. We are worried about the expiration of SNAP programs at the federal level and would hope the state can ensure that that will continue moving forward. Maternal health for our black women in Illinois in particular and all women. Mental health services, and we also want to expand economic access with housing, food security, and transit funding as well. And finally, we really want to make sure that criminal justice reform continues to improve and invest in things like the FAIR Act for public defenders, as well as reentry services for the formerly incarcerated, and more changes in policies to make sure that black families can stay whole and can restore their core.
Yeah, and we'll certainly come back to those direct impacts as well. But Ted, of course, as we mentioned, you know, the state budget is it's $55 billion, but we mentioned that $3 billion deficit. What are your concerns with a hole that big?
Well, my big concern is that the government's trying to do too much. And when it tries to do too much and spend too much, it's taxing too much. And we have the highest property taxes in the country. We have the second highest gas taxes, maybe the highest overall state and local tax. And that hurts every family, and in particular hurts minorities, right? I think they struggle when the economy's weak. We've got the fourth worst growth in the economy since Governor Pritzker took over. We're spending a lot more than when he took office in 2019, $13 billion more. It'll be $15 billion more. It's a lot of money. And what happens is that with taxes so high, with our debt so high on the pensions, Chicago the same thing, but maybe worse. We're killing the economy, and that's hurting people. And when you have a slow economy, you're not creating jobs, people aren't getting paid well, and you create more government dependence, which means the government has to try to do more. And you get into a really bad, vicious circle. That's where we are now. We're in trouble.
Jade, what options does the state have to raise revenue to address the deficit and fund services?
Yeah, so at CTBA, we do have a report that will be coming out later this spring. And so we do address three key ways that the state can increase revenue. One is raising the flat state income tax rate. Currently, it's 4.9%. We're proposing to increase it 1.5 percentage points to 6.45%. The second option for the state is expanding our sales tax base to include consumer services. Currently, the state of Illinois does not tax consumer services at the rate as our neighboring states do. And if we did expand our sales tax to include more consumer services, we could see a net income that the state would definitely increase. Would increase at the state level. And then lastly, one of our, I guess, more aggressive measures to save funding for
to raise revenue,
mm-hmm. That is to re-amortize the pension debt. And so that's a really big one. I don't think we foresee that happening for the current budget year,
but maybe down the road.
Yeah.
So, Ted, what about a couple of things that she mentioned? Raising the income tax, also raising the sales tax. You mentioned that, you know, increasing taxes actually impacts communities of color more or worse. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on some of those ideas?
Well, I think we have to start with the facts, and you know, these are all straight from the government. Black poverty in Chicago, highest in the country among the 15 largest cities. Unemployment rate for blacks, highest in the country among the 15 largest cities. All the stats, if you look at growth rates, Chicago dead last in economic growth since Governor Pritzker took office. We are really struggling, not just overall, but for the minorities. And so for me to even think about more taxes is just punishment for the people. And we know we lose people. Chicago in particular has lost a lot of black people in the last 20 years. Their path is to leave Illinois to find their success. And if we keep raising taxes, all we're doing is chasing companies out. We're hurting the economy. We're hurting our growth. And I think that the suggestions, while they might have good intentions, actually do the opposite of what they intend to do.
Adam, what are your thoughts? And what is the impact, though, if families aren't able to receive the funds or receive the services that they have come to depend on?
Absolutely. Economic growth is important, but providing baseline levels of service for all Illinois residents is the primary function of government. And we have, for way too long, not invested properly across the state for the needs of all communities. And we are still chasing basic adequacy in funding in school districts, as an example. And so I understand the fiscal position of the state, but we need to think about the outcomes that we are pursuing across the state to get to more healthy communities.
Brandon, if I may just throw in there, a place like Jacksonville, cities like Columbus, they have half the unemployment rate that Chicago does. So you can imagine if we cut that unemployment rate in half, how many more people would have the basic incomes, the basic services, and, you know, have much more economic freedom. So it's really about getting that growth and not stunting the economy and hurting the minorities that that need help.
I guess, Jade, sort of, you know, same question to you. Like, how do you think, you know, belt tightening might impact families that depend on services? I mean, particularly like healthcare and education.
Sure. So what we do, one of the things that we do at CTBA is do a look back to 25 years in the past to FY 2000. And we're looking at how much has the state cut from discretionary spending than we did in FY 2000. So after adjusting for inflation, overall spending is down 8.5%. And specifically, it's most notable in one of our core service categories, and that's higher education, where it's down 43% over FY 2000, which was under Republican Governor George Ryan.
We've already seen some services cut, healthcare for undocumented people. What if we start to see more cuts, especially as, and Adam, I'm going to come to you for this because it's the last question, but especially as there are concerns, for example, about Head Start and some of the federal funding cuts that the state might be seeing.
Yes, absolutely. Communities across the state of Illinois are very worried that some of their core services will evaporate and they don't know what they're going to do. And so even programs like Head Start, if they go away, that will prohibit a lot of our families from getting to work because they depend on Head Start to drop their kids off so they can participate in the economy. So there is a connection with growth and public spending that sometimes gets lost in the political shuffle. But often investing in communities foundationally is investing in all of us and in Black families in particular.
Okay, that is a good place to leave it. Thanks to the three of you for joining us. Adam Slade, Jay Dill, and Ted Dabrowski. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Up next, news about the long-awaited DuSable Park. Lakefront Park, honoring Chicago's founder, has been nearly four decades in the making. But the green space commemorating the legacy of Jean-Baptiste Pointe-du-Sable is finally taking shape. Developers have submitted plans to develop the $15 million, 3.4-acre Lakefront Park to be ready by 2027. Joining us to talk about it are Paul Montez, president of the DuSable Park Advisory Council. And on Zoom is Carol Ross Barney, design principal and founder of Ross Barney Architects. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
So, Paul Montez, let's start with you. This project is a family affair.
It is.
For you.
Yes.
Take us back to the beginning. Where did the idea to create a park and, you know, honor the city's history this way come from?
So the idea started back in Harold Washington's administration when Harold Washington, Dr. Margaret Burroughs, mm-hmm. Ramon Price, and my mother, Peggy Montez, came together and said, we need something for DuSable, for the founder of Chicago. And they decided to dedicate a park to DuSable. So the location was identified, the park was purchased, and it was dedicated back in 1987.
Okay, and tell us about the significance of that plot of land where the park will be.
So it's really the confluence of the Ogden Slip, the Chicago River, and Lake Michigan. So it's the entrance to Chicago. It is the premier spot for entering and seeing our wonderful city.
and it might look a little bit different from the way it might have looked. Is that like near where DuSable entered the city? Is that where he found Chicago, sort of?
So the settlement that they've identified for DuSable is actually where the marker is right now, which is actually on Michigan Avenue and basically the river.
Yeah, just so folks know that it's
so it's not it,
it's not where DuSable showed
spot.
Up and was like, hey, this
exactly.
is it. Exactly. So, Carol, what features can residents expect from this park?
Well, first of all, it is a very small park. And I think that because of its size and because of its importance, we really are designing an experience that'll make you think, that will make you wonder about Chicago, that'll make you think about how you fit into Chicago's history and Chicago's landscape. I know that just the last few days, Sun-Times published some illustrations of the park, and I hope people have had a chance to enjoy them.
We're sharing some of them with our viewers right now as well.
Okay. The park will interpret DuSable's life. It will help you understand the changes that were happening in Chicago when he arrived here and the ones that he was party to, that he was part of making.
And Carol, how are you including Black designers in this process?
Oh, since I am so pleased that I'm doing this with my very good friend, Ramona Westbrook of Brook Architecture. In fact, we are working together in a joint venture that's called Design Partners for DuSable. The Design Alliance. In any case, Ramona and I have been really looking for a project to do together. She is a Black architect practicing in Chicago for her entire career now. And we finally had this opportunity, and we've had an absolutely amazing partnership working for this job. The DuSable Park Design Alliance also consists of other partners, other consultants, and many of them are Black. For example, we've been working with Dr. Christopher Reed, who's probably one of the, probably the top expert on DuSable and his life, his historian, and his insights have been invaluable to the design of this park.
Sounds like the perfect opportunity for you and your friend to work together on. Paul, why do you think it took so long for this idea to become a reality?
So, combination of things that occurred at the park that were actually unforeseen. First, the park was actually, the land itself was actually toxic. It had thorium that had to be removed. The state, the city, and the federal government helped to secure funds to be able to remove that. The seawall itself that surrounds the perimeter of the park had to be replaced. So that too had to be rebuilt over time. And then unfortunately, the park itself was and still is attached to or connected with the development of a separate property. So it's kind of a public-private combination to build the park. Originally, it was with the Spire development that unfortunately went bankrupt.
That we all know about, yes.
That hole continued to remain. And then Related Midwest then took over the site and are now the ones that are moving forward with the construction. So with the construction of the 400 North Lakeshore Drive building, the park gets funded. So part of the funds that come from the park are from the city, which is about $5 million. And then the balance of the $10 million, as well as this construction, will come from Related Midwest.
Okay. Carol, your firm presented an exhibit titled Parallel Histories at the Chicago Architecture Biennial about the park. How did that project inform the park's current design?
Well, the exhibit you're talking about, Parallel Histories, was part of the Chicago Architectural Biennial. And we were asked to participate. And we were working on the design of DuSable Park at that time. And we thought this would be a great opportunity to give sort of an advanced notice that this park was finally coming. And so Parallel Histories actually consisted of two parks. One was a installation that it's still on the site. Unfortunately, it's been graffitied recently, but an installation on the site that announces that the park will be there shortly. It's actually a 3D representation of the size of DuSable's house. And there was another part of Parallel Histories that was in the Cultural Center. But we've set it up. You can visit our website at my studio,
We'll make sure that folks can access that, because we're actually out of time. 5 seconds, Paul. The park needs more approvals. What happens next?
So with the more approvals, we'll go to the CPD. I'm sorry, CDC.
The Park District.
Park District will go to CDC for approval of the plans that they've completed. And then the park, once that one tower goes.
And hopefully 2027.
2027, two years from now, we will have a park.
Paul Montez, Carol Ross Barney, thank you so much. Looking forward to the park.
Thank you.
And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.